Welcome to Wise and Nice, a true crime podcast with your hosts
Danny Armstrong
and Kelly Lee.
Please remember that we mean no disrespect to anyone mentioned in this episode or across any of the Wise and Nice platforms. We have an interest in true crime and related topics, and whilst we may offer our own personal views on certain items, it is meant to be educational and as light-hearted as possible. The information we present is collated from research gathered from the internet, and we reference and credit our sources wherever possible.
If you've liked what you've heard and want to join in with us, follow us on our socials, Instagram, Wives and Knives the Pod, Twitter, at Knives Wives, and Facebook, Wives and Knives Pod. We also have a little website where we post photographs and other information about the cases that we research. And this is wivesandknives.wixsite.com/my site.
Hello and welcome to this week's episode of Wives and Knives.
Yes, hello everybody. Hope you're all keeping safe and well out there.
Yeah, I hope you're all doing good.
I was just going to start off by saying welcome. We've got some new listeners and new followers, so welcome. Thank you for supporting us.
We really appreciate it.
I think that's about it, really. Any catch-ups?
To do with my actual life, no, I'm fine. Nothing hugely exciting, but nothing awful to report either, so I'll take that.
Yeah.
I'm going on holiday very soon. I'm looking forward to that a lot. However, in the crime world, there is a case, and I wish I'd written the name down, but hopefully I'll mention it and you'll be like, oh yeah, I've heard about that. Really recently, a girl went to, it's in America, a young girl went to like a college, like end of college party, and it was near a lake. And she's just gone missing.
Oh, no. I don't think I can help you with this one. I thought you were going to say something else then.
Oh, no. But it's like it's one of those cases that's like unfolding at the moment. Oh, my God, why didn't I write her name down? I'm an awful person. Hang on. I'll be able to find out. But, yeah, I've been checking for updates on that because quite a few... podcasts that I follow have done things about it very recently, so let's have a little look.
It's not Keely Rodney, is it?
Yes, it is.
Right, okay, there you go.
How did you know that?
Because you just put in Google what you said and I found it.
Oh, okay.
Wonders
what a fucking technology. Detective we have in our midst. Yeah, it was Keely Rodney. It's Keely Rodney, and her case is unfolding at the moment.
It's one to definitely watch, isn't it? The one that I thought you were going to mention was Awami Davis or Davies.
Yes.
Because I can't believe, like, how much, well, how little I've heard about the case.
Yeah.
You know, she's been missing for nearly 6 weeks now. And there's been CCTV sightings of her, but nobody seems...
Wasn't she missing from Croydon?
Essex, Grays Essex. But, yeah, she was spotted in Croydon.
Right, I knew I had Croydon in my head.
Yeah. I think she's been seen on CCTV in Croydon, and it's strange because, like, her family had no idea that she regularly travelled there, but there is evidence to support that she would regularly visit Croydon. So it's a very peculiar case. She's a student, I think she's a student nurse or a full registered nurse, but she's, yeah, 6 weeks ago, missing, CCTV of her appearing like dazed and confused in Croydon. It's really peculiar, but again, can't believe how little there is in the media about it.
Yeah, it's a shame. I think maybe we give it a few more weeks, but it'd be one to, if nothing has been resolved, it would be a great one for us to cover.
Definitely, yeah, I completely agree.
Cool. Okay, we're going to get cracking with this week's case then, love.
We are. So, yeah, this week it's the controversial case from Australia, and it takes place in the 90s. I don't know if you've heard of it, but it is the case of Joe Cinque.
Only from you mentioning it for a few weeks.
So yeah, it's a very well-known case regarding Joe Cinque and his girlfriend of the time, Anu Singh. Case File have done a very in-depth episode on it, so I would recommend you give that a listen.
I love Case File.
Yeah, I do. Me too.
I was actually listening to a Case File case, their latest one, all of yesterday while I was like doing chores and stuff.
Yeah.
They're just great. Absolutely amazing.
One of my favourites for sure. There's also a book which was then made into a film. The book is called Joe Cinque's Consolation, and it's by Helen Garner from 2004. And like I say, they made it into a film, which is pretty good. Lots of articles, which I'll put in the sources. I always try to be impartial when we do different cases. However, with this one, I just can't find any redeeming qualities. I really dislike this person, but obviously make up your own minds. So let's begin. Anu Singh was born in India on the 3rd of September 1972 to Indian Australian parents Pradyum or Paddy and Surinder Singh. The family emigrated from India to Sydney in 1973 when Anu was just a baby, and they settled in the suburb of Strathfield. Now, Anu Singh's early life was, as you'd expect, for the child of two doctors. She was afforded quite a happy one. The only thing that I could really find that stood out was that she had separation issues with her parents. So she would, you know, like be unconsolable if she was ever like away from her parents for any length of time. But apart from that, quite a, you know, unremarkable childhood. So as a teenager, she attended a Catholic high school in Newcastle in Australia, where she was an excellent student in terms
of... Not North England.
Yeah, I thought I'd shove that in there just to make...
For me.
Yeah.
We know my geography's not great.
So she, as I said, she, you know, like in terms of studies and everything in grades that she was achieving, she was excellent. But again, a few issues... I couldn't find specifics, but it's implied that there was a few issues with her behaviour as a teenager. Now, Anu graduated high school in 1990, and the following year she moved to Canberra to begin studying a double degree in economics and law at the Australian National University. Now, whether this is a callback to her separation anxiety as a child, but she missed her life in Sydney, and she would frequently call home to her parents for support. Now, she started using recreational drugs at this time, and her mental health suffered, and it's fair to say that she was struggling, and so she returned home to her parents, deferring her studies for 1 year. Now, when she returned to the university and continued her law degree, she seemed to settle down and improve in herself. And she started a relationship with a guy called Simon Walsh. Now, this relationship was very serious and intense. And she was still seeing Simon in 1995 when, on a night out, she met Giuseppe Joe Cinque at a bar in Newcastle. So Anu was out with some friends when she met Joe, and he was like a handsome young civil engineer. He introduced himself, bought her a drink, and the pair hit it off instantly. So they had a few things in common, and they realized that they'd actually been at the same high school, so just a year apart. Joe was born, he was the firstborn son of Maria and Nino Cinque, and he was born on the 11th of June 1971, so not too much older than her. Like, in fact, I think she was just the year below at the high school, St. Francis Xavier's College, where, because I think in Australia, I think it's a bit like they stay in high school, like sixth form, so high school and college are similar, and then, do you know, so they're there till they're like 18.
Right.
So Joe's friends like described him being a very kind, funny, like popular young man. He basically had this really chilled way of like dealing with people. So no stress, no dramas, very popular. Everyone really liked him. So Anu and Joe, after meeting at the bar, they have a brief affair. And when Simon finds out about it, he ends his relationship with Anu. So despite being fully complicit in the breakup, like Anu took it very badly and her mental health once again suffered. So she began to use the recreational drugs again, but she was using them daily. She developed insomnia and she would like pace the house at night. So there's quite a few mental health issues going on there for Anu. Now, Joe was still on the scene and the couple begin a long distance relationship, and he would travel every weekend from Newcastle to be with her. And by all reports, he was like very smitten with Anu. Like he loved her. They had a great connection and by all accounts, like a very physical relationship.
Yeah.
But Joe was concerned like about Anu's behaviour, and he was concerned for her general well-being. She was, you know, struggling, and some of her behaviour was quite worrying. And Joe wanted to care and support his new girlfriend with what she was going through. So his visits to see her became like increasingly frequent. So like every weekend they would get together. So during their relationship, Anu was dieting excessively and she'd obsess about her weight and her physical appearance, to a point like of body dysmorphia, really. You know, she would, she considered herself to be grotesque when in fact she, you know, like she really wasn't. She had a lovely figure and everything, but in her head, she didn't see that. And this was so bad that she like actually developed an eating disorder, and she'd spend hours in the gym and even started to use Ipecac. Have you heard of Ipecac?
No.
So the only reason I've heard of it, I remember it being used like in a film, and I don't know like specifically which film it was, but basically it's a vomit inducing drug.
Oh.
So if you've maybe like eaten something that you shouldn't have,
right,
you could take it and it would immediately make you be sick. And Joe was the one that actually told her about Ipecac. He didn't suggest that she use it. He just suggested like that if you, you know, if you needed to, then there is a drug that could help you. So as well as this obsession with her weight, Anu Singh was convinced that she had a serious medical condition related to her stomach. So she thought that she had some kind of like digestive or gut issue. And I've also heard that she thought that she had like a muscle wasting disease as well. So regardless of what it was like perceived as by Anu, she began to see like multiple doctors, like one after another.
Right.
And all of them ran extensive tests on her, like including numerous like neurological tests, but none of them could find anything physically wrong with her other than that she was underweight. So all her tests were normal, and several of the doctors and her parents, who were doctors also, suggested to her that she perhaps see a psychologist, because they felt that her issues were not physiological, they were psychological. But Anu sort of like maintained that there was nothing wrong with her psychologically, that this problem she had was a serious physical one. So just to reiterate, the doctors did not agree with that. They thought it was psychological. There was nothing wrong with her physically. Okay, so after a year of dating, Joe actually moved from Newcastle to Canberra to be close to his girlfriend.
Right.
And they moved into a townhouse together at 79 Antill Street. And for a time, things were, you know, I guess fine. I don't want to say normal, but fine for the couple. But Anu's condition, in inverted commas, was worsening. So her university attendance became sporadic, and on the rare occasion that she was actually seen by classmates, they said that she appeared to be like disheveled, poorly dressed, which was like in direct direct opposition to how they had originally seen her. So she used to be well presented, and now she didn't quite look herself, so they were a bit concerned. At this time she was actually experimenting with amphetamines, and perhaps as a result of this she would like regularly spiral into paranoia, and she believed that things were like crawling under her skin. She had like dissociative symptoms as well. I think once she told her mum that she felt as though her head was like sitting on top of someone else's body. So there's a lot of things going on there. Anu and Joe were happy to a point, but like in my opinion, I think this happiness must have been fleeting for both of them, because like how hard must it be to like enjoy each other when one is constantly ill, imagined or otherwise, you know? At what point are you like that person's carer rather than their partner? And I think this was a concern that was shared by, you know, Joe's family and friends. They were quite worried about the couple. Like they'd noticed a change in Joe. Like was Anu too much for him to handle? You know, she was constantly making demands of him. Was she too controlling? Was she unstable? And could she potentially be dangerous? In 1997, Anu's mental health like had made a serious decline, and she was now convinced that her stomach problems were caused by the use of Ipecac, which, as I mentioned, had been allegedly suggested by Joe. But worse than that, she believed that she'd actually contracted HIV. Now, just to clarify, she had not. Anu told one of her closest friends, a girl called Madhavi Rao, I think I'm pronouncing that correctly, that it was unfair that Joe hadn't contracted HIV too, and that because he'd been the one to like recommend the Ipecac to her, which she believed was causing her all these problems, like it was kind of his fault that she wasn't well. And she'd actually gone on to say that she planned to put a drop of her infected blood onto his toothbrush as punishment. Wow. So, I mean, I think that speaks to her mentality. That's just disgusting.
Yeah, it's getting darker and darker very quickly.
It is, yeah. And I don't know if this is accurate. Like, I can't find it to corroborate it, but I had heard that she did, in fact, put some of her blood in his food, so which he then consumed. But she didn't have HIV, and it's not something you bloody joke about to start with, but then to potentially try and infect someone's disgusting.
Yeah. But
anyway, as well as that, she also told her friend that she wanted to go on a rampage, killing Joe, killing her ex-boyfriend Simon, and also the doctors who she believed had failed to correctly diagnose her. So, and I've got a quote here of what she actually told her friend. "I've studied psychiatric texts, and it wouldn't be too hard to convince someone that you're insane." So in 1997, that same year, it's the first time that Anu mentions to several friends, including best friend Madhavi Rao, about wanting to end her own life. Towards the end of that summer, she'd approached another law student and asked him to help her get a gun so she could kill herself. She told him that she'd considered a number of methods, including like taking an overdose, hanging herself, but she decided that shooting herself was the best option. So she's going to complete suicide, and she begins to do her research, and a plan is formed. But in order to make it happen, she's going to need a few things. Her closest friend, Madhavi Rao, she helped Anu to buy Rohypnol and heroin. And the heroin was actually prepared by the dealer, and it was 1 gram of heroin, which had been split into 2 preloaded syringes. Now, why 2, you may ask? Because Anu wasn't going to go alone. She was going to kill Joe as well. So the two women, they organised like a farewell dinner party, and they invited like a range of friends and acquaintances from the university, and most were aware of like the reason for the party. But however clear like Anu and Mutavi were with the guests about the party's purpose, Joe had absolutely no idea of his proposed involvement in their alleged suicide pact.
That is so odd. So people knew they were going to this party because...
to say bye to her, basically.
I don't even know how... Yeah. Like, how would you invite someone to that?
Well, do you know, it's very strange, agreed. But I get the impression that apart from, like, Mutavi, Anu had friends, but I wouldn't class them as friends. Like, they were just people that she chatted to occasionally, like, that she knew from class. I'm not defending these people, but I don't think they took it that seriously.
Right, okay.
Because no one tried to intervene or to, like, seek help for Anu.
Yeah, that's what I'm like, why people go into this party but not doing anything to try and help her?
Again, not trying to defend, but I just feel like they didn't take her seriously because of the type of person that she was. She was very, like... a bit of a fantasy. So I think there'd been a few occasions where they knew that she'd maybe over-egged the pudding, do you know, like in little things that had happened, and
yeah, she'd
blow it up and make it into a big dramatic thing. So I think that they just thought, oh, here we go again, it's Anu like being a bit of a dick, and right, didn't really take it seriously. No one tried to intervene or seek help for Anu or Joe, and when the first party like passed without incident, they assumed it had been like a bid for attention.
Yeah.
So the truth was that Anu had drugged Joe. Like she'd given him sleeping tablets and some Rohypnol, and he'd passed out as planned. However, when it came to preparing the heroin for like administering to Joe, she'd struggled with the syringe and so had given up. So the next day, like, Joe woke up pretty confused and with no memory of like after the party, and I think she sort of like said, oh, you had too much to drink, you know, are you feeling okay? And he was like, whoa, I didn't really think I drank that much, but you know, oh well, it's all good, let's carry on. On October the 24th of 1997, Anu organized a second dinner party, and it went much like the first. So a range of fellow students from her degree had, you know, were invited. They came, and they'd heard the rumours that she had planned to kill herself later that evening. But again, nobody did anything. So after all the guests had gone, Anu crushed up like several Rohypnol pills, which is, if you don't know, a known date rape drug, and she put them into Joe's coffee. Now, over the next 36 hours, she injected him several times with heroin. And at one point, she actually left to buy more heroin and brought it back and administered more to the now unconscious Joe. So over the next day and a half, 36 hours, Anu concealed her crime. She called Mutavi like to her house, and she actually saw Joe on the floor unconscious, but nothing, like she didn't call an ambulance or do anything. During this 36 hours, Anu made several phone calls to friends, like telling them what she was doing. She told them that Joe wasn't well, he was vomiting blood, and that he was like taking very shallow breaths, and that his lips had turned blue. Again, no one called the police and no one tried to help Joe. So just to put this into context, at least 20 friends, in inverted commas, are aware that she plans to kill Joe and supposedly herself, right? Four friends know that she's given him sleeping pills and then the Rohypnol. Three friends know that she's purchased heroin and that she's consistently said that she's going to kill herself and Joe. One friend knows that she has done something she shouldn't have, but again, no one has intervened. So at 11:55 in the morning, 3 days after the dinner party, Anu calls one of her friends, and this girl is a nurse. And she, to be quite like fair to her, she has quite the go at Anu. She says, you need to call an ambulance, you need to get him some help. They could, the paramedics can administer a drug called Narcan, which kind of reverses the effects of heroin.
Right. So
it could have helped him. She doesn't sort of do it straight away, but at about 12:10, about 5 minutes after she's hung up this phone call with this girl, she does call an ambulance. So she calls 000, which is the Australian version of 911 or 999, and she asks for an ambulance. Now, she says that she's got a person with her who has potentially overdosed on heroin and is vomiting blood. But Anu gives the wrong address. She gives the dispatcher her different name. It feels like she's doing everything within her power not to get help. And as the phone call goes on, she's getting more and more hysterical. She's asking, what shall I do? Will this person die? Eventually, after a few minutes, the dispatcher's able to get the correct address, and Anu hangs the phone up. About 4 minutes later, Anu calls the dispatcher back, so rings the emergency number again. She's still hysterical, and again she's asking, what am I supposed to do? The dispatcher gives her instructions on how to perform CPR, and Anu later says that she did give Joe CPR, but I'm not 100% if I believe that.
Right.
Several minutes later, the paramedics arrive, and Anu's outside the house and she's waving them in. Now, she tells the paramedics that Joe had taken heroin, and when they ask how much, she says 150. So I'm not sure if that means 150 grams of heroin.
Or 150 dose.
Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
So the paramedic, obviously, as part of their job, is asking, have they taken anything else? And she admits, yeah, he's taken Rohypnol. And she adds that they were taken at about 3 o'clock in the morning. Now, the paramedics attempt to resuscitate Joe, but sadly, it's not successful. It's too late for him. Now, at this time, Anu is becoming completely hysterical. She's screaming, it wasn't supposed to happen this way. We were supposed to go together. And all through this time, she is trying to kiss Joe's body. She's sat on top of his prone body. She's very dramatic. Yeah. It actually took three men to keep Anu out of the bedroom where Joe was. Eventually, the police arrive, and she is taken into custody. At 6 o'clock that night, she is charged with murder, and her parents are called, and they say that when they arrive, she is crying, shaking, agitated, incoherent, and she is folding herself up and pinching her arms, and she keeps saying over and over again, where am I? On October 28th of 1997, Anu first appears in court, and she's charged with murder. And she tells the police that on the day that Joe died, she had injected him with heroin so that he would not interfere with her own suicide attempt. I just want to point out that at no point during this time frame has she actually tried to take her own life.
Yeah.
So she has never at any point taken any drugs herself. She hasn't administered any heroin to herself, which was clearly the reason that she'd given to all her friends. The point was to subdue Joe so that she could complete suicide. But at no point has she tried to do that. She is just focused on Joe. Madhavi Rao, Anu's best friend, is also arrested and charged with conspiracy to commit murder. So Anu applies for bail in December of 1997, but this is denied because, you know, based in part on her psychiatric condition. She was actually evaluated at this point by a forensic psychologist, and she is diagnosed with narcissistic personality disorder, histrionic personality disorder, and depression. Anu and Madhavi were actually tried jointly in October of 1998. However, in early November, there's a question about a particular piece of evidence and whether or not it's applicable to like one of them or both of them. So the trial's declared a mistrial in like a little bit later in November of 1998, while they sort of like reschedule, and they decide to try them separately at this point. Right. Because they say it's not fair to Madhavi, because like she, while she is complicit, she wasn't actually there administering the heroin to Joe, but she did know about it. So in 1999, the following year, a new second trial begins, and the defence present evidence to say that she's suffering from multiple mental illnesses, and this has like diminished her criminal responsibility. They, you know, they say everything about how she believed that she was suffering from these, you know, digestive or gut problems, muscle wasting disease, and everything else. So all the dissociative symptoms, she was suffering from bulimia, and due to like all of those factors, she could not be like fully rational and aware of like her actions, which again, I do not agree with. The prosecution, on the other hand, they present evidence of how rational and how assertive Anu was, you know, like how she managed to go and source all the drugs that she needed, and how her sort of behaviour, the conversations that she's had with friends about the dinner party, everything like that, how it shows that she did know what she was doing.
Yeah, it's not a spur of the moment thing. There's a lot of planning that's gone into this. It's
absolutely
very vindictive.
Yeah, completely agree. On April 23rd of 1999, Anu was found guilty, but not of murder. She was actually found guilty of the lesser charge of manslaughter, and he sentences her to a minimum of 4 years in jail.
That's ridiculous.
Yeah. Now, Madhavi's trial took place during the same time, and she was charged with murder, manslaughter, attempted murder, and administering a stupefying drug, but she was acquitted on every single charge. Now, what makes this even worse, the part that I really struggle with here is, Anu had served time in jail between the time that she was arrested and her trial in 1999, and this counted towards her 4-year minimum sentence. So using that time frame, she was actually paroled from prison in 2001. Like, she barely spent any time in prison.
Yeah, that's so quick.
However, she actually returned to prison in 2004 because she was caught smoking weed or marijuana, and that was in direct violation of her parole. But again, she challenged that imprisonment and was released on a technicality a few weeks later. In the time that she was spent in prison, she actually managed to complete like her degree. After she left prison, she went on to get her master's degree. And that was in criminology.
Wow.
But get this, her first job after being released and, you know, like getting her degree and everything, was handing out clean needles to drug addicts as part of her employment with the Canberra Matter Community Centre.
Oh my God. God, why?
I know, exactly. She's killed a boyfriend using several needles full of heroin, and now she's handing needles out to drug addicts. So there was, quite rightly, a considerable public outcry about that. And basically, the response was that it was a time-limited project. That was it. So I don't know who thought that was okay, but I felt like it's just another fuck you to his family, basically. Yeah. So after this, she began doing research at the University of Sydney, the Faculty of Law, and she completed a doctoral dissertation, Offending Women Toward a Greater Understanding of Women's Pathways into and Out of Crime in Australia. So basically, her entire career is built on her murdering her boyfriend. Now, she's currently in a relationship with someone called Aaron Erbacher, and he is also an ex-convict, and she apparently met him while she was in prison and awaiting trial. So I don't know how that works, but perhaps they were just, like, both in the same court or something. I don't know. I just find it fucking disgusting. I don't know why, like, there's no real explanation as to why she killed Joe. But Harvey Rao has sort of implied that she genuinely believed that Joe had made her ill by providing her with this Ipecac, or suggesting this Ipecac. But I have heard that it was rumoured that Joe had basically, like, got to a point when he'd had enough of her shenanigans, shall I say, and he was planning to break up with her, so she might have killed him to prevent him from leaving.
Yeah.
I don't, you know, like I said, the motive isn't clear, but to me it just seems like a very selfish act of possession. You know, I can't understand the reasoning behind what she did.
Yeah, I see it more as, like, him, if she thought she was going to lose him.
Yeah.
And it wasn't that she loved him, it's just she couldn't bear the thought of him leaving her.
Yeah, exactly.
That kind of thing.
I mean, I can't, you know, I can't say that she wasn't mentally ill. I do believe that.
She was, definitely. But I don't think that could be used as a justification for any of her behaviour in any way.
I think at every single point of the act, from pre-planning to actually having these farewell parties and stuff, there are so many occasions where she could have helped him, even up to when he was, like, very, very ill from the heroin. Yeah. She could have helped him, but she chose not to. And it just pisses me off. Like, at no point after either has she shown any genuine regrets. You know, she just seems to have been thrived from it.
Yeah.
The fucking, pardon my French, 4 years, like, is a massive fuck you to his family. And
I was gonna say at one point, but I didn't know whether it was a bit of a weird thing to say, but she's been so lucky.
Yeah.
She does not deserve that, but she has been so lucky.
It pisses me off. And like I say, she hasn't, I think it was, well, I'm just checking my notes here. Yeah, the 14th of May 2017 is the first time that she officially apologises for her actions. That's like over, well, that's like, what, 20 years later?
Yeah.
Which is disgusting. And I feel, and that also coincides with interviews being given. So again, I feel like it's just her trying to make herself look good.
Yeah, it's her being the main character again.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, absolutely. So, like I say, that's the first time since their son's death that, when she apologises on the 14th of the 5th, 2017, she actually not speaks directly, but she records this apology, and it's during an interview that she does this, and it's played to Joe's parents, so Maria and Nino. And basically what she's, it's the first time since Joe's death that she's spoken like directly to them, even though like they're not face to face.
Yeah.
And this is what she says. I would like to say to them that I am deeply, deeply sorry for what happened, and that if I could, if there was any way I could turn back the clock, I would do so in a heartbeat. So that's her message to his parents. And I absolutely love Maria and Nino Cinque. They're just, you know, whenever you see them, they're just so strong. Like, they're absolutely heartbroken and they will never get over the loss of their firstborn child.
Yeah.
They're so strong. But Maria's response is, I call you the devil and you are the devil, monster. You have destroyed my family completely. Like, there is no forgiveness there. And I completely agree. I think that's, you know, accurate.
Yeah.
I wouldn't forgive that. She, at no point, while even though she's apologised, she does not seem at all remorseful for what she did. And like you said, it just feeds to that main character energy. But it's not a nice main character. She, no. It's just horrible from start to finish. So, yeah, that's pretty much it. I probably should check this. I believe Nino passed away, actually, Joe's father, but I'm not sure when that happened. But yeah, it feels like she's been allowed to create, like, to commit this horrific offence, go on, and just live her life with a mild little blip of a few years in prison.
Yeah.
And get everything that she wanted before she killed Joe. You know, it feels to me like she had to do that for her to move on. But Joe didn't deserve that. Joe was a lovely guy. He only did things to help her. So, yeah, I just, like I said at the beginning, tried to be impartial, but I just can't. I think she's a complete bitch and she does not deserve to be free and have this life that she has. And also, for the people that were actually at the party, none of them, you know, they, none of them got, they basically got told off, based, you know, like nothing, they didn't get any prison time or anything.
Yeah.
And some of those guests have gone on to have some relatively high profile, successful jobs in the law industry, you know, and I just, again, I think, what does that say about you as a person? That you just,
yeah, what kind of character have you got?
Yeah. So there's no, it's no wonder that this is such a controversial case, to be fair. And as I said, again, as I said at the beginning, there are loads of podcasts. There are loads of, you know, interesting articles to read about it that probably go more in depth than I have. And I will put all of that in the sources. And Joe Cinque's Consolation, the film, is available to rent on Amazon, and it's not too pricey at the moment if anyone fancies a watch, but it is definitely worth it. So there you go, that's the case of Anu Singh and Joe Cinque.
Well, I really enjoyed hearing about it because I didn't know it. You know, when you hear it, a new one. But what a fucking awful case and a miscarriage of justice.
Absolutely. Almost,
because she did not get what she deserved at all.
No.
Also, I definitely think she's mentally very unwell, but she's still not getting the treatment for it. And
no,
and not out of a concern for her, but a concern of the people that she's in contact with. No,
like,
that's something. But like, I know people who have diagnosed personality disorders, and they are amazing people.
Yeah,
who deal with the issues that they have, in a. In the best way that they can, and they're great, amazing people who are so much more than whatever diagnosis they've got. And she's just a complete bell end. There we go.
Yeah. Ultimately, yeah, the main message here is you can't blame that shitty ass behavior, the fact that you're a narcissistic, like, delusional murderer, on the fact that you have several issues going on in your life.
Yeah.
You know, she was seeing doctors. They were telling her that she needed to go and see therapists and things like that, rather than keep focusing on, you know, a perceived physical problem. But she didn't do that. She just decided that she was going to kill him. I don't at any point believe that she wanted to kill herself.
No.
She would have missed out on the attention that she so, like, craved. I don't believe her at all. And I think this is, like, that sentencing is a fucking joke.
Yeah.
So there you go.
It is indeed, definitely.
So we will be back with another episode. Not quite sure what it's going to be. Any ideas, love?
No.
It'll be a surprise.
It'll be a surprise.
So until then, everyone, you know, stay safe and look after yourselves. And we'll see you soon.
Bye.
Bye.